The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. Here's what we're talking about on today's episode. President Biden pausing approvals for U.S. exports from new liquefied natural gas projects. U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm explains.
We are working every day at the Department of Energy to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And that means making sure we manage carbon emissions.
And a big interview with a big star, NBA Hall of Famer, philanthropist, businessman, and now fellow podcaster. It's Dwayne Wade.
My education, you know, probably is greater in the game of basketball than anything else. And so my greatest tool and my greatest schooling right now is other people's experience.
A Dwayne of all trades, what he's learning from his partners and what everyone's learning from him and from the Oscar-nominated documentary that he produced.
I was following a young man named Arlo Washington, and he's about creating opportunities. He's about building community.
Those conversations, but first, the Fed's most watched inflation metric. And CNBC's Jane Wells is on the ground in Maui 6 months after the fires.
Housing here is always a problem, but right now it's a crisis.
I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. It's Friday, January 26th, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
First up on the podcast today, some economic data. It's the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, or PCE. It's the Fed's favorite inflation measure, and it's important if the central bank is planning to start cutting rates this year. The core PCE for the last month of 2023, up 0.2% for the month, and up 2.9% from the year prior.
Now, 2.9 ends up being the lowest level going back to... Oh, man, we're going to go back a ways here. 2.9 takes us to March of 2021. So these indeed are better numbers.
That was CNBC's Rick Santelli, our on-air editor and our economic data whiz in Chicago. So what does it mean? Well, it means inflation is still going up, but the pace at which it's going up is slowing down. Remember, yesterday, the Commerce Department released the GDP numbers for the last month of 2023, and they were much better than economists expected. So what will the Fed do? It's hard to say. The central bank has named that magic 2% as a healthy inflation rate. And the closer we get to it, the more likely it's going to be interpreted as a green light for the Fed to start cutting interest rates. Look out for next week when the Federal Reserve has its next meeting and decides whether to keep rates steady, to hike them, or to cut them. For what it's worth, economists for the most part are expecting the Fed to hold steady. But tune in next week. And that's it. Let's get to the rest of today's stories.
The Biden administration planning to temporarily pause pending decisions of the export of liquefied natural gas. New export facilities that do not yet have a permit from the Energy Department will now be put on hold during the pause. Officials will evaluate the impacts of LNG exports on energy costs, energy security, and the environment. The new move does not affect current exports or previously permitted facilities that have begun construction. The U.S. became the world's largest LNG exporter back in 2023, just 7 years after beginning exports. In a statement on the decision, President Biden saying, quote, the pause on new LNG approvals sees the climate crisis for what it is, the existential threat of our time. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm is going to be joining us with more on that decision. We're going to be able to talk to her all about what it means, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of pushback from folks in the industry and the like. Meantime, on Wednesday night, Secretary Granholm met with Jamie Dimon, David Solomon, other top Wall Street bankers, in a dinner that was put together with the help of former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson. Sources familiar with that event telling Bloomberg that Granholm urged the bankers to invest in clean power and other clean energy technologies. And of course, Hank Paulson has dedicated himself to climate and is now working with TPG on a clean energy fund.
I have no words. I do have words. I can't. It's Friday.
Look, my blood pressure is already. It's not just the industry that's looking against this. Liquefied natural gas replaces coal in most of
these
instances.
That's what it displaces when we sell it.
It's displacing the coal when we sell it. It's also a security threat from Russia.
It's a great business.
When Russia cut off Germany, we were able to step in and help them out to make sure that we were getting
things there. We need exports. We love exports. It's a great export business. This is what I said in makeup. I'm not going to say it again, but this is the most obscene type of politicking to try and get young voters for the election. That's what it's all about because of their total infatuation with the climate issue. And I said, both sides do it. The politicking is, you know, people watch it at home, you wonder why we're so cynical. The politicking is so bad. This is the worst system, economic system in the world that we have, except for every other system.
Well, but can I just say that it is possible that you could have a genuine view about
it's
the
really
climate,
not,
which
Andrew.
Is di- which
it's,
you disagree
it's,
with.
It's
I know.
Really not.
I'm just saying there
really
are,
not possible because are, even,
it is
even
possible.
I'm not even going to talk about the how ludicrous some of this has gotten, but this displaces coal.
I understand.
I mean, it's as ludicrous as what you hear from the other side with former President Trump saying that he doesn't want to
see there's reason
a
they
deal
say that.
Done on the border.
That's because Republicans want something with a lot of teeth in immigration. And if you accept a watered-down Chuck Schumer bill, it's not going to be what...
There's a way there
politicking is everywhere. Check out the shares of Tesla. Stock closed down 12% yesterday after the company warned of a slowdown in growth in 2024. Last night on Mad Money, Jim Cramer said Tesla is out of the Magnificent Seven group now of high-flying tech stocks.
Well, someone who is among the first to vocalize the Magnificent Seven rubric, I officially acknowledge now that there are only six left.
That's the other thing. I mean, I don't know where the real climate types think we're going to power the grid. That's what I don't understand. Natural gas is probably the best way. Power the grid. Probably the cleanest, best way. We have to power the grid
right.
for all this other stuff that we're going to do. Even if, you know, it's solar and wind aren't ready and they're not going to be ready for a while. So,
well, it's not just that. It's the transmission lines to get the energy from the solar and wind, from where the wind blows, from where the sun shines to the rest of the network.
Or where the sun doesn't shine.
I know where that is. Just about 6 months ago, devastating wildfires ripped across the island of Maui in Hawaii. Hundreds of millions of dollars of aid flowed in. Jane Wells is tracking that money, and she joins us right now. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Becky. Yeah, the fire zone remains closed off, though we will be escorted in later this morning by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which has sent some photos. They just got in there now to start clearing debris. Nearly 6 months after the fire killed 100 people, destroyed thousands of homes and businesses. We wanted to follow the money. Honolulu Civil Beat has been running a tally. It reports nearly $1 billion has been raised or allocated so far for fire victims, about half of that from the government. On the nonprofit side, Maui Strong says it's taken in $178 million as of mid-January, dispersed about half. On the corporate side, $1.5 million in grants and goods has come from Walmart, which opened its doors and parking lot in Maui after the fire. Now, thousands of people who lost their homes are still living in hotels, 1,000 of them at the Royal Lahaina Resort, including 100 of its own employees. The hotel could make a lot more money from tourists, but it plans to stick with FEMA and the Red Cross and house locals for the foreseeable future. And some of them have left Hawaii now. The government is offering top dollar for short-term rental owners in this area to convert to long-term leases. Enough of them have not stepped up yet, and if they don't by March 1st, the governor is threatening to ban Airbnbs. Becky, housing here is always a problem, but right now it's a crisis.
Jane, there was a lot of talk at the time about money that was promised by celebrities, too. Has that come through?
Yeah, we've been trying to track that. Take a look. Guy Fieri raised over $2.5 million. I reached out to find out where it's gone. Have not heard back. The People's Fund of Maui with Oprah and The Rock, They tell me that through January, they've paid out $50 million in $1,200 a month stipends to over 8,000 people. Finally, yesterday afternoon, I talked to some people who said, yes, we've gotten that money. We love Oprah. We've had us in September. And then Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez promised $100 million. Their spokesman tells me they've so far spent $15.5 million. They said it's gone to the Maui Food Bank, the Humane Society, and I have confirmed with those organizations they've received money.
Jane, this is, I mean, it seems like such a long time, but how does this match up to other natural disasters that we've seen in terms of recovery?
You know, I've covered a lot of disasters, and recovery on the mainland is much faster than here. This is a small area. Every square foot is sacred and cultural. There are competing interests, and nothing gets done quickly. It's going to take years and a lot of money, and the concern is that many people who grew up here will leave here, and that's part of the magic of Hawaii. It's not just a beautiful place. It's the people and the culture.
It is heartbreaking, the scenes that we've seen. Jane, thank you for bringing this attention to it on how they continue to rebuild. And we hope you can keep giving us these updates. Jane Wells.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, more on the Biden administration's decision to pause LNG export projects, or new ones anyway, plus the state of electrification in the U.S. with Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm.
Nothing will change in terms of what is currently being exported or what is currently under construction. This is just a pause so that we can have an assessment that is rationally based and then apply that assessment to those projects that are in the queue.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Andrew.
The Biden administration temporarily pausing and now pending decisions on the export of liquefied natural gas. New export facilities that do not yet have a permit from the Energy Department will now be on hold during the pause. Officials will evaluate the impacts of LNG exports on energy costs, energy security, and the environment. This new move does not affect current exports or previously permitted facilities that have begun construction. Joining us right now is Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm. Good morning to you. We've been talking about this all morning and trying to understand the rationale behind it. A lot of folks looking at this and saying that, you know, exporting LNG has been a great thing for the United States.
Yeah, I mean, we are the world's largest exporter now of LNG, but we have a responsibility at the Department of Energy to ensure that all the authorizations are in the public interest according to the Natural Gas Act. And in order to fulfill that responsibility, since the sort of boom, shale boom, and the exports of LNG have begun, we have undertaken a periodic assessment of what the lay of the land is. The last assessment, though, was done in 2018. And we, at that time, we were only exporting 4 billion cubic feet of natural gas, which is a fraction of what we're doing now. Now we're exporting 14 billion cubic feet. We have another 12 billion cubic feet that are under construction and a total of 48 billion cubic feet that have been authorized. So none of that is going to be affected. All the stuff that's under construction that's been authorized, none of that is going away. Certainly the stuff that's being currently exported, there's no impact. But it is we have a responsibility given how much we have authorized, and given the lay of the land across the globe, the climate impacts, as well as the question about what's the cost going to be at home. If we're exporting half of what we produce, what is the price impact for those who use?
Well, let's talk about that. So I think there's a question, Mark. Is this about the climate? Is this, some people would say, is it about politics? Is this about price? Meaning, do you actually think that by doing this, you're going to lower the price back here in the United States? Do you see the various issues here at play?
And there are various issues. And there are several factors that we have taken into account on these assessments. And we just need to update the data associated right. with the factors. So the factors are, what is the impact on national security? What is the impact on foreign policy? What is the impact, in other words, our allies and whether they're able to access the energy that they need? What is the impact on the price at home? What is the impact on the climate? And so what we need
But that can't be done without stopping, but without pausing. I mean, I think that's the other question, because some people look at LNG specifically and they say, look, this is a cleaner form of energy. In fact, when it's exported, oftentimes it is replacing energy that might be produced by coal, which is a lot dirtier.
Yeah, it's a good question. And that's one of the things we have to evaluate. This is a temporary pause for the purpose of doing an assessment, which will be done in leadership by our national labs. This is not an indefinite pause. It will last some months. There will be a comment right. period, et cetera.
Madam Secretary, it will last till November 5th. That's what people are saying, Madam Secretary. You know that the young voters are the climate is front and center. And the cynics of this on the other side would say this is pure politicking, that President Biden needs young voters. And you can see the comments from the climate lobby. This is like, you know, they're celebrating and you know, toasting the Biden administration for this pause. And it looks if you're cynical, you don't need to look beyond that. It's just politicking.
I understand the cynics are going to say what the cynics are going to say, but we are following the law. And under the Natural Gas Act, the Department of Energy is required to assess what is in the public interest. Right. We need to update our assessments.
I don't disagree with the idea of trying to reassess, you know, every couple of years where things are. I think there's a question mark really more about the can you walk and chew gum at the same time idea, which is to say, you know, what prevents the department from doing that assessment without a pause while the assessment is going on?
Well, there are 13 projects in the queue between the Department of Energy and FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Those projects account for another 12 billion cubic feet. We need to assess, we want to make sure that we are applying the same sort of standard to those that are in the queue, to those that will be coming up into the future. But as I say, the pause would make no difference whatsoever, because none of the projects would be exporting natural gas. None of the projects that are in the queue would be exporting natural gas, because they'd have to be constructed. That would take years and years. Nothing will change in terms of what is currently being exported or what is currently under construction. This is just a pause so that we can have an assessment that is rationally based and then apply that assessment to those projects that are in the queue.
Secretary Granholm, will the Department of Defense be involved in this at all? I only ask because one of the reasons we've been so pleased about this exporting of LNG is that we are able to come to the rescue of some of our allies in Europe. You think of Germany and what happened with Russia, them cutting them off from their natural gas. This is a huge thing that we can supply our allies with that natural gas. Who else gets a say on this?
Yeah, and we will continue to do that. And we have projects in the queue that are being constructed that will add to what we're already doing. National security is one of the considerations that we make in these assessments. So we will certainly consult with our folks at the State Department, at the Department of Defense. It's really important that we stay strong with our allies. We also have to take a look. I mean, consider this. Our allies have also made commitments about reducing their dependence on natural gas. If we have authorized already enough to meet the world's demand just in the United States by 2050, which is roughly what old models have said, that the global demand by 2050 will be about 52 billion cubic feet. If that still stands, we will have provided the entire world with enough LNG, not to mention all of the other folks that are coming online. It is important for us to consider why all these countries are saying that they want to shift away from fossil fuels because, of course, of climate change. And so how do we evaluate what countries have put into place in terms of their own demand for natural gas? Is there going to be that level of demand for natural gas? We learned a lot about how to curb methane emissions. We've learned a lot about how to stop leaks at the wellhead and leaks in transportation. And we're recruiting other countries to make sure that they commit to a global methane pledge of reducing. So we want to take that into account as well. So it's very important for us to be close with our allies and ensure that they have the energy security that they need as well as we do.
Madam Secretary, your comments on our show, and I know we have a business audience, and I'm sure that you wouldn't cater your comments to that, but they're very measured and you bring up a lot of reasons other than climate change for why you're doing this. But if you look at the way the president's selling it, and he basically said, that this is an attempt to tackle the existential crisis of our time. And activists are hailing the decision as a landmark crisis that shows that industries will no longer just get a blank okay to proceed with building oil and gas projects. A powerful statement: we can no longer allow these industries to continue operating. And that harkens back to President Biden's campaign vow to put the fossil fuel business out of business. And he said that, he said, read my lips, we will put fossil fuels out of business.
I did not hear him say that. I think the president recognizes,
just look at YouTube,
as we all do, that there should be a managed transition, that fossil fuels are not going away in the immediate. That is why the focus that the U.S. has been such a leader in making sure
how long do you think, Madam Secretary? Do you think, I mean, just give me an outside, do you think it's 50 years or do you think it's 5 years? Because if you're pausing now, it assumes that we're going to be able to transition in like 5 or 10 years. There are people that say it's going to be at least 50 years for the global economy to be able to operate. It can't operate without fossil fuels. You can't get fossil fuels without infrastructure.
We are working every day at the Department of Energy to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And that means making sure we manage carbon emissions, we reduce carbon emissions, we have the technology associated with that, the oil and gas industry. Many are stepping up to the plate in that. The reason why people say that by 2050, we will get to net zero is because there is a recognition that there will need to still be, and this is not just me saying this, this is the science from the International Panel on Climate Change, that there will still be some use of fossil fuels. But can we manage the emissions? Can we eliminate the emissions? And that's really a very important strategy.
Secretary, that US is taking. I have one final question, and it relates to EVs in a meaningful way, and it's about consumer demand and what we're seeing, which is there's been a big push, obviously, from government, and frankly, I think we thought from the marketplace for EVs and what that would ultimately do to the interests of oil and whatnot. However, there's clearly a slowdown taking place, and we're seeing it, by the way. Tesla stock is down even as a result of this. That's probably been the most successful, I think we can all agree, EV maker in the world, and yet it's getting harder even for them. And so the question is, what is that about? Is that an infrastructure problem? Is that a market problem? Are the products that the other automakers are making not good enough? And if that's the case, what do you have to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's several things. One is the price of EVs has been higher. Now, Kelley Blue Book has just assessed that last year alone, the price of EVs dropped 23%. So they're now relatively on par with new internal combustion engines. So that price issue is continuing to move in the direction of the consumer. It's not quite there yet. The tax incentives and the state tax incentives combined make that even more irresistible. but it's a confusing tax incentive market. The dealers have to take on a lot of educating of folks to be able to apply those tax incentives at the dealership. People aren't aware that if you lease a vehicle, the more restrictive tax incentives don't apply. And so you can really take advantage of that. And of course, it's an infrastructure issue. People do have range anxiety. It's why we have been so focused on increasing the number of charging stations across the country. That we expect that we'll get to 500,000 charging stations across the country by 2026.
Secretary Granholm, appreciate it very, very much. Thank you very, very much for discussing this all with us.
Up next on Squawk Pod, Dwayne Wade, NBA legend, author, movie producer, philanthropist, and still learning even more.
We're business partners, but I'm learning so much from him. And so I look at him as like, okay, if I was in school, this would be a professor.
Dwayne Wade's newest ventures and longest held philosophies right after this.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Up and Andrew, Q.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square on this Friday morning. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan.
You know him for his prowess on the basketball court, but our next guest is a successful businessman, an author, a movie producer, philanthropist, and much, much more. And now Dwayne Wade is adding podcaster to his resume. He teamed up with iHeart Podcasts about a week ago and launched The Why with Dwayne Wade. It's a weekly show featuring intimate conversations with pioneers in sports, fashion, music, and business. We are very pleased to have with us NBA legend, Hall of Famer, and three-time NBA champion, Dwayne Wade. Dwayne, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Good morning. Nice. Y'all get up like this every day. Like
we
this.
Do.
But you're trying to take our job, it sounds like. So, I see you got a whole round table, right?
Yeah, I had a round table with Dirk and Tony and Powell. That was my first podcast interview that I've ever done. And I got a chance to do it at the Hall of Fame with some of the greatest players ever.
But a little later in the day.
A little later in the day, after doing a lot of media, so my brain was woke. But I appreciate it. You know, the podcast is something that a lot of people are getting into. And I wanted to get into it as well at this time in my life. And it's really to, talk about people whys. And I feel that understanding and knowing your why in life is very important. And so the name of my podcast is The Why with Dwayne Wade. And it actually has another double entendre, is because my whole life people have misspelled my name. They've always put the A before the Y. It's the Y before the A. And so I wanted to make sure that I claim my Y as well in my name. And so that's the go, The Why with Dwayne Wade.
Is it because the curiosity factor? I mean, trying to figure out what makes people successful, what makes them the greatest of all time?
Yes, I've been playing basketball my entire life. And, I went to school in the middle of playing basketball. My education, probably is greater in the game of basketball than anything else. And so my greatest tool and my greatest schooling right now is other people's experience. One of my professors, I say right now in business school, his name is Ryan Smith. He's one of my professors because we're business partners, but I'm learning so much from him. And so I look at him as like, okay, if I was in school, this would be a professor that really has helped me and guided me. And so, yes, learning from others, learning from their experiences is how I gain my knowledge as well.
There's a lot of people who learn from you, too. I don't know if everyone realizes you went to Harvard and completed a program there on business and sports and entertainment. Yeah. And there's actually a case study on Dwayne Wade where everybody learns through you. What's in that case study?
I believe that case study, shout out to Harvard for the BIMS program that's ran by one of the most amazing teachers, Anita. One of the case studies was dealing with I was with Stan's, the socks company. So I was dealing with that partnership and, did I do the right thing? What should I have done? I think it also covered maybe my shoe deal at the time as well. I signed a shoe deal. With Li Ning, I have my own brand. I think it dealt with that. So it was just a case study around my businesses. And it's been cool to go back in different years to sit in the classroom and hear what the students have to say, like what they would have done differently, what they should have done. that everyone is have their own way into business and into thinking about, you know, how to structure deals, and it's not all the same.
What so far, what's been the best deal you've made, and what do you think has been the biggest mistake and the lesson of it?
The best deal I've made, well, in retirement and or in life?
Sure, in life, we'll take life.
The best deal I've made is to, when I was a kid, I talked to the big guy and I told him that who I was gonna be if my family ever got out of the crisis that we were in. That's the best deal I made with the big guy. And I'm trying to hold that to be true and all the things that my family stand for, all the things we do in the community. So that's the best deal I've made. But in retirement, being able to have relationships with, like I said, with Ryan Smith, to be a part of the Utah Jazz, to be a part of Real Salt Lake and the Utah Royals and all these places, it's teaching me a lot about different industries and sports that I play, but not, maybe not know the other side. And so that's probably been one of the best things that I've done so far.
Just on the worst deal you've ever made, we ask a lot of investors that all the time, because I think a lot of time people learn more from their mistakes than from their successes.
Yeah.
What's a deal that maybe you learned something the hard way?
I've been in court in my life. I've been sued in my life. So I've had a couple of failed restaurant ventures that has led me in court for lawsuits. But really not doing my due diligence, really not having the right people around me to protect me from the vultures of, you know, of the world. And so I've done some bad deals. I've done some things that I've learned from that has landed me in court. So very, very bad deal.
When was that deal that you made? Were you in high school when you made the deal with the big guy to be, and was it being, was it about being a great basketball player or just by being a great person? What was the deal that you made? What was it you wanted to be?
No, I was my sister and I, when I was young, I was between 5 to 8 years old. We shared a bed. We lived in Chicago, Illinois. And every night she would tell me to pray. And she would always tell me to ask God for what I wanted. It was always be direct. And in the midst of asking him for what I wanted, I wanted to help my family. I wanted to be the one to help my family get out of the community that we were in. And in the midst of that, I always talked about, well, if you do this, big guy, these are the things that I'm going to do. And I've tried to hold those pillars true in the midst of, you know, going through life and learning life.
Basketball, I mean, obviously helped you avoid a lot of the, your goals made a lot of the trouble kids get into. You can't do that if you're going to be was it basketball or just success? Or how do we repeat this again and again and again for kids?
Well, I mean, basketball was my journey. And it's a great journey. Obviously, every kid won't have the same opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, in the community that I come from, I think you talked about my production company. And right now we have Barbara of Little Rock, which we executive produced.
It just got an Oscar nod.
Thank you. Yes. I mean,
the nomination for this is unbelievable.
I so appreciate it. My company, the 59th and Prairie, we're just highlighting, we're just a part. But the story is where you can make change. And you know, I think if you follow that story, it's about it's following a young man named Arlo Washington, and he's about creating opportunities. He's about building community, and to build community, you have to build people, and to build people, you need capital. And so, you know, just understanding that in my community, it's not everyone can't make it to the NBA. But if we can do what Arlo Washington is doing, and we can build our community, if we can provide capital.
He's building up.
Yes.
Yeah, that's just
so I just thought it was amazing. I mean, a man who's providing opportunities, sending individuals through barber school, also opening up a nonprofit loan fund to be able to build his community through people. That's how we get to that change.
How did you find him?
He found me. Let's say that. The producers, Christine and John, you know, I think people are understanding the ethos of 59th and Prairie and everything that we want to be a part of and accomplish. And so they reached out to us about the story. And it reminded me of growing up in Robbins, Illinois, where I grew up at. And it's the same act, just in a different place. And so I really wanted to highlight this injustice, you know, that's going on in our communities when it comes to, you know, the wealth gap.
Dwayne, I want to thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. It's really a pleasure.
How far is Marquette going?
We're going all the way. What do you mean? What do you mean?
You went to the Final Four, right?
Yes, it's time for us to...
To do it again.
To do it again.
Okay.
Thank you, Dwayne.
That's the podcast for this week. Thank you for tuning in, and I'm glad we all made it.
It's Friday. My blood pressure is already...
Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. You can catch them live for 3 hours straight on weekday mornings on CNBC starting at 6 a.m. Eastern. You can always get the highlights from that TV show right here on Squawk Pod as long as you follow us wherever you're listening now and turn on those downloads. We'll meet you right back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.